And I'd like to call your attention to the Forever Green map over here. When you have a chance, you can see the hundreds of colored pins in there. Those represent conversations between our staff and the public that we don't usually see here at planning board meetings. So this has been a tremendously successful community outreach over a period of 9 days. It's a significant commitment. However, we cut our costs down. We recycled exhibits. We had fewer staff. We had a smaller tent, a smaller space to rent. So we're very pleased with the results that we got, and thank the commissioners for their support in participating in the county fair. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and it's great to see us winning yet another award. No, we don't get tired of it, but it's a tribute to the hard work of the staff, and particularly I want to mention the fact that Marion and also Joyce Coleman, I guess about a year ago, came to me, and we talked about the fact that for a couple of years, Park and Planning has not gone to the fair as a budget-saving measure because of the staff time and the exhibits. There is an expense, and we were trying to save pennies, and they both really leaned on me to say, you know, this is really, we need to be present at the fair. This is one of the premier events in Montgomery County, and Park and Planning needs to be there. And obviously they were right, because not only were we there, but we were there in a way that has earned accolades. So thank you for setting us on that road, Marion.
And Mr. Chair, have we found a room to put up all our awards so that we can, a place where the public can see them?
When we get the new building,
Oh, good. All right, thank you.
But in the meantime, we are looking at putting up some of the gold medals and other things out in the lobby here.
Okay, because we're getting quite a few now. To get them all together would be good.
Or we could put them in here. Well, you're working on that, right, Charlie?
That's right.
All right. Okay, the next item on the agenda is to talk about the zoning text amendments and legislative proposals, all dealing with the issue of MPDUs. This is items 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. We're going to begin with a briefing from our staff. We will then take public testimony. We will then talk about what comments we want to transmit to the County Council. The County Council will also be holding a public hearing on September 23rd. And having had a number of conversations with people both at the Council and in the community about this initiative, I want to say that it's obviously an important initiative. There are a lot of unanswered questions. At this point, everyone recognizes that. And I anticipate that the deliberations and the back and forth will be extensive. It is entirely possible at some point this issue may come back again to the Planning Board before the Council acts for additional discussion or for additional comment. So no one should feel as if today is the last chance to comment or to have an influence on the outcome. There's going to be a lot of discussion and a lot of opportunities to comment. But let's begin with the staff presentation. Mr. Carter? Mr. Russ?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Greg Russ from Development Review. I also have John Carter here from Community-Based Planning and Carlton Gilbert from Development Review. And also I have Sharon Suarez as part of the research team specifically related to housing and the bills associated with that. First of all, as I'm sure everyone in the room knows, the proposed text amendments and subdivision regulations were initiated by Council to strengthen the MPDU program. The text amendments increase the flexibility in the existing development standards to provide more opportunities for moderately priced dwelling units. The provisions included in the text amendments are also additional opportunities for MPDUs to be constructed on site in CBDs and transit station areas. For example, one purpose of the text amendments is to reduce the need for buyouts and alternative agreements. What we have decided to do is, rather than go specifically through the legislation as part of the actual staff report that you have before you, I think we're going to look at this in terms of the general concepts pertaining to the MPDU legislation. I handed out a sheet a second ago that really deals with mainly one of two issues, and first being what the planning board's willingness to waive certain standards in the zoning ordinance or findings in the zoning ordinance to achieve moderately priced dwelling units. Would you be willing to waive or waive some of these standards to achieve MPDUs, whether on site or additional MPDUs in other ways? What the table actually does is show the specifics in terms of the MPDU legislation that's part of the text amendments and the subdivision regulation amendments, and on the left side shows the actual waivers or the intent of those text amendments, and on the right side it's what staff recommends in terms of what we should be receiving in return for those regulations being modified. The first issue here is the under, I think, ZTA 04-11 relates to the elimination of the building coverage requirement and allowance of a reduction in the green area requirement in all multifamily residential zones. Staff believes that concept is an acceptable concept in terms of actually building coverage requirement being eliminated. For one, building coverage can be handled through the setback requirements as well as the green area requirements within the multifamily zones. And this requirement under 04-11 is related to the multifamily zones. So what's been proposed here is actually reducing the green area requirement and eliminating the building coverage requirement. Staff thinks that's staff has no problem with that concept. So as a staff recommendation, there would really be nothing beyond the normal MPDU requirements received as a result of that, other than providing more flexibility in terms of providing the MPDUs on site. John, is there anything about that one?
I would, just for my part, I would not recommend accepting the text amendments as is, that they went a little too far in terms of reducing items. Right now, the way the multifamily zones are set up, they're older zones. It's much like the one-family detached zones. If you have no MPDUs, there is a set of standards, and then there are a set of standards if you have MPDUs. The council, there is a 20% maximum coverage for multifamily today with MPDUs. Personally, I think that's a little way too low, particularly when you're talking about the Woodmont Triangle area as an example. There also is a green space requirement it varies depending on the multifamily zone from 47 to 53%. I don't know why you need a green area and a coverage area. So what we proposed is we supported the notion of eliminating the coverage, but instead of going down to 20% coverage, which is what the council has proposed, beef that up to about 35% coverage. That would be in sync with the TSR, zone, which is a multifamily-like zone. So while we're agreeing with the notion, we're not accepting or not recommending the language as it's specifically written.
When you say coverage, you mean 35% green space.
With no coverage requirement.
65, which...
Yeah. Which
in essence is 65.
Yes, yes. Why you have both.
65% coverage.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then that's, those would be, this is not a waiver. This is if you have, it's a development standard, different set of development standards if you have MPDUs. So there's no discussion of on-site and off-site, which we're going to get to on these in the next set.
So that's not, that would not be a matter of discretion. It would just be embedded in zoning code.
Right.
This is the standard and...
Standard and then the optional method, so to speak. Right. Just like the one family zones. Okay. Now, I think where the argument would be whether the green space is adequate or not, but we're proposing upping that.
That's fine. Keep going.
Okay. The second text amendment, which is ZTA 04-12, the actual intent of that is really threefold. One, residential density bonus over the base density and residential FER to be increased for a project in a CBD or transit station zone. The second being a reduction in the public use space requirement under the CBD zone. And also allowing an increase... No, excuse me, just those two. The staff's recommendation in this case is in favor of those actual waivers or modifications, but with the notion that MPDU should be provided on-site as part of that. And that you see that in the actual on the table, and it's items 2 and 3 on there, or the second and third lines there. John, you want to talk about the...
Yeah, you want to take these one at a time. There's a chart that at least was useful to me. It might be useful to you. It's in our memo. It's page 12 that's not numbered of the attachment in the back. It's a bar chart, very simple chart like this. The reason for this is so you understand exactly how this would work. Now, again, I think the council language, just taking the second item on your list.
Is this it, John?
That's it. Yes. Residential density bonus over the base density.
Next to last page.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
Attachment 1.
The way the language is written now, it says you get the density as necessary. That's a little too bold, I suspect. That needs more boundaries on it. I think this is okay if you're getting the density bonus provided in the Chapter 25A, which is the sliding scale. The problem with this, with the CBD zones, and any zone that has a floor area ratio calculation, there has never been a density bonus like you have in the one-family detached zones. So in the one-family detached, you get a bonus 22% more dwelling units, 15%. Our MPDUs. We don't have a similar thing for FAR. Nobody's been able to figure that out for all these years. But I'm proposing this is the method that shows on this chart. So a project comes in. If you take the one on the left, it has a 4 FAR. Say it's the CBD2 zone that allows 4 FAR under the optional method. You would come on with, and you see the dotted piece, 1 FAR would be residential in that. So it's a mixed-use zone. What would be the MPDU bonus given this text amendment? What we would propose is you would get a 22% increase on your FAR, the residential FAR only. And then you would, at the same time, the applicant would come in with a number of dwelling units. 15% of the dwelling units would have to be MPDUs in that case. So it's actually charts out pretty simply. On the second column is what happens if it's a bigger project, a larger percentage of residential. Again, you just get the bonus over and above what the residential FAR is. So in that case, you get almost an additional.
And they would get that additional FAR by right so long as they agree to put all their MPDUs on site.
On site, yes. Okay. No bonus without providing things on MPDUs on site, because the bonus, if you're buying out, first of all, that's a land use consideration, which is your purview. But second of all, if you're getting the bonus and buying off, the MPDUs are now becoming market rate units, which goes over and above how we think about MPDUs. So that's why we're suggesting it should be on site if you're getting any bonus.
This is your recommendation.
This is our recommendation.
What does the current
It says additional density as necessary. And I was concerned about those words, as necessary. I suspect they thought it in the same way. It just doesn't say that.
You're creating
a little more clarity.
A clear formula as to what necessary means.
Yes.
Well, in addition, the proposed text amendment only says that to achieve any applicable density bonus on site. It doesn't specifically say that the MPDUs have to be on site.
Right. So is the density bonus, is it off the commercial? Is it off the residential? It's very unclear.
That's my question. You're eliminating the concept that, in fact, the commercial bonus could, in fact, apply.
That's right.
And the rationale for why it can't be commercial versus residential, the argument is specifically what?
This is a residential initiative. It's coming off the residential. We don't do we don't provide additional bonus off the commercial. That would be a greater incentive. I could see where you might want to do that.
But that's my
point.
But
it went to the original theory of how MPDUs are constructed and how these bonuses work. It is the residential increase in market rate units that is supposed to pay for the MPDUs. That's the theory behind it.
Yeah, I guess what I was
thinking. Maybe we're being a little too simplistic, which I think is useful in this exercise because it's so broad. But we were trying to keep it in sync with the law as written now.
Okay. I understand that part. And I'm not pushing. I'm just asking for clarification. But in terms of the analysis that was done, have we looked at what could be the greater community good in terms of providing affordable housing if we allowed the bonus density to be on the commercial, and how many more units could be provided versus on the residential? Did I make that clear enough?
I think you did, and I think the clear answer is no. I didn't.
Know that we have not done that kind of analysis.
We didn't do that kind of analysis.
Right. Okay. Is there room for that kind of analysis in terms of the legislation that's being proposed as you see it? Or is the legislation so clearly biased against that concept that it would be unnecessary?
I don't think the legislation says. It's not clear what the legislation is actually proposing. I think the authors, but this is my think of what the authors are trying to do rather than asking them individually.
Both concepts then could be, in fact, applicable from that standpoint. Okay.
Could be.
All right.
I wanted to make one other note on this. In the CBD zones, which is complicated, you have two methods. You can go a residential in terms of units per acre method.
Mm-hmm.
In that method, there is the bonus. It's when you go to the FAR method, when you have a mixed-use requirement, that you don't, this is present day, don't get the bonus.
Right.
What this would accomplish is giving you the bonus in both methods, whether you're coming in all residential or mixed use. So it seemed to me it wasn't upsetting the general way that the zoning ordinance were.
And we can get back to this after we hear from the public. Keep going.
Okay, the next one, reduction of public use space on site. Under the standard method today, you can reduce the public use space from 10 to 5% in three of the CBD zones. This would allow you to do it in all six of the zones. So it seemed to be to us that was okay. We oppose reducing the public use space requirement in the optional method. We remember this is discretionary on the part of the board. And your discretion, we rarely, if you're doubling your density, the requirement is rarely 20%. It's a zoning ordinance requirement, but you ask for more. It's that more where your discretion should be, not going under the 20%. But that's, again, my perhaps perspective on that. And then the third one, let's see, allow an increase in density in accordance. Oh, that's the building height.
Yeah, that's the next.
Oh, this, okay, you want to do that?
Yeah. The next text amendment, which is ZTA 04-13, relates to, as written, allowing any residential density or building height limit established in a master plan, sector plan, or urban renewal plan to be exceeded up to the maximum of the applicable zone for a project in a CBD, RMX, or development plan zone that includes MPDUs on site. First, staff made recommendations here to clarify this language to basically allow the increase in density in accordance with the range of MPDUs required in Chapter 25A and the building height up to the maximum in the zone. So the difference there is the language currently says for density or building height to go up to the maximum in the applicable zone. Typically, density will go past the actual density of a particular zone if MPDUs are required, but only to the extent to provide the MPDUs on site. So we made that change to clarify that. In addition to that, staff's recommendations are make sure that MPDUs are provided on site for this concept as well.
This is, of course, the most controversial of all of them. At least for this staff member, the closest one in terms of going forward, if you want to sort of get a sense of the nuances of where the staff recommendation is. Clearly, again, as Greg said, this needs to be clarified. You don't get the maximum in the zone. What you get is over and above what the density bonus over and above what the master plan says, not the zoning maximum. That's an important nuance in this, if you even want to go to this extent. The master plans this affects, in short, would be Friendship Heights. Most of them are the existing ones, like Heck Company, which is already approved, but could come back. Bethesda CBD, particularly in the Woodmont Triangle area, which we are already initiating a master plan amendment. North Bethesda, anywhere you have TSR and TSM zones, we've undercut that from FAR 3 to 2 extensively. And then at least one case in Potomac, which was the Kevin John Center master plan. So those are the master plans that it actually affects. It also affects the intent of the master plans. We could lay out specifically what each individual master plans say and what the specific effect, but there is also just the intent of it does lessen a bit the master plans and the way they're treated. The right way to do this would have been to amend the master plans, I suppose. Now you'll have the master plans in place and the zoning ordinance in place and a discussion of what you do when an application comes in. This will give you more leeway to override master plan, the base density in the master plan. To the extent that the master plans, and some of them do this, talk about a number of units and is not clear when it's saying MPDs could be over and above that. This would make the clarity in that, and that's probably useful.
John, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Assume that the base density says you can have, we'll use units just for the simplicity of a mathematical example. Let's assume that the base zone says the maximum zone number of units you can have is 150 units.
Yes.
Okay? And sector plan says, in the sector plan language, that we're going to limit it to 120 units. So are you saying that the legislation says that it could be 150 units plus the MPDU bonus without regard to the master plan, or that the legislation says 120 units plus the bonus?
The legislation is unclear now.
So it could be either.
You could read it where you go to whatever the maximum is in the zone. Because it says as necessary to achieve the MPDUs. If you're going to go this route, my recommendation would definitely be you just get the bonus on top of what the master plan.
So it'd be on top of the 120 units.
Yes.
That's your recommendation.
Yes.
Okay, thank
you're
you.
Going to go that way. Yeah. But again, this is the closest one, and the most fiery of all. Okay. The last two are simpler.
Oh.
I'll be quiet. No, Charlie says no. Okay.
ZTA 04-14. The intent of this text amendment is to allow up to 100% of the total number of dwelling units in a one-family residential zone to consist of one-family attached units or duplex units or townhouse units to achieve MPDUs on site. The key here, again, is our recommendation is to provide those MPDUs on site and possibly provide some additional provisions in here. We're not quite sure in terms of what as of yet, but we're maybe looking at, if allowing 100%, maybe having additional MPDUs, maybe a percentage of more MPDUs as a result of this. But there's also, we have to remember that there is language in there that says that the development has to be compatible with the surrounding and adjacent properties as well.
But what does that mean where it says allowable dwelling units? Any development that exceeds the maximum percentage of allowable dwelling units? I couldn't figure out percentage of what.
I think that's referring back to the existing percentage limitation on attached units.
Yes, that's
but there
right.
is no limitation now. It can go to 100%.
Well, there is.
Well, without the waiver, there's a limitation.
Which is on, if you're looking
the
at...
50% or the 60%.
Yeah,
but assuming that there is a waiver, how does the compatibility thing fit in?
It says if there is a waiver, you must still make a finding that it's... You can give a waiver if you can still make a finding that it's compatible with the existing and approved development.
Oh, they're really referring to the waiver.
Yes, yes.
Any development that receives the waiver
yes.
must be compatible.
Page 5, which is it? Page 5? 3.
Page 3 of attachment 4.
Yeah. Do any of the other zoning text amendments talk about compatibility?
Compatibility would still remain... And like the CBD zone, you'd still have compatibility finding in all of those.
That's in the original CBD
yeah,
requirement.
CBD, yes.
Okay. Let me just add a little bit to what Greg was talking about here. The problem we have with this language where it says limits on development at that site would not allow the applicant to achieve MPDUs on site is to us very vague and difficult to administer because right now any regardless of the amount of development that you can provide on the site and the limitations, an applicant has to provide 12.5% on site. They could request a buyout, but we would have no way of knowing whether that's going to happen unless we somehow negotiated the buyout before the plan came to the planning board. What we think should be happening here is that in order to get this waiver for the mix of units, we should be getting something additional in return beyond the MPDUs on site, which we already get. So our view is that maybe there should be a requirement in here that you can get a waiver if you can show that you are providing some percentage additional number of MPDUs beyond what would be provided given the existing standard for what the mix of units should be. So we haven't totally thought that through yet, but our view is that we're not really getting anything in return for the waiver the way this is written.
Has there been a problem that the MPDUs haven't been built in these kinds of situations?
No. I mean, basically the buyouts never occur in this type of a situation.
So you're already getting
the
MPDUs?
We're already getting the MPDUs on site. We may be getting fewer than potentially possible because of the if there are site constraints and they have to use the abide by the mix of units that's currently required, then in fact the density may be limited overall. So,
but you're still getting 12.5% of whatever
the number of units is. So if you give the waiver, theoretically you should get more units overall, which would give you a greater number of MPDUs, even if it was still just 12.5%.
Okay.
So our view is that should somehow be hooked into this.
And if I understand correctly, and this was the question that I had in terms of understanding at least, not agreeing or disagreeing, is that if there is a requirement that there be 60% detached, for example, and we provide a waiver with the idea in mind that we can get more MPDUs on site if we provide the waiver, then that means that instead of 60%, it might be able to go down to 50%, and then you have more attached homes, et cetera, up for that difference.
Right. I think we would still require that the MPDUs be on site, but we would also say you need to get more MPDUs
as a result of allowing that waiver to occur.
Right. Correct.
Okay. And our point here is what exactly regarding that understanding?
What is the staff recommending on this provision?
Our possible additional provisions is what I was just describing in this recommendation on the handout. Is that there should be additional MPDUs in return for the waiver?
Okay. If in fact there's a waiver to allow the 60% to go to 50%, we no longer want just 12.5%. But we want maybe 15%.
Well, we want 12.5%, but there ought to be
in addition to
a larger 12.5% of a larger number of units, so that you get a higher number of MPDUs.
Right. Okay.
At a minimum.
Okay.
So we need to think.
The applicant must establish that the number of MPDUs created with the waiver is greater than what would have been created without it.
Correct.
Absolutely.
But wouldn't you want some kind of scale? I mean, basically, if you get 10% increase in the number, at least under the spirit of the law, at least 15% of the 10% would have to be MPDUs, maybe more, because I'm not suggesting a specific number, but the concept.
Right, the question is whether you want to just do it in a case, the board could decide on a case-by-case basis, or whether you want to establish a sliding scale.
I mean, if they got a waiver that allowed them to, let's just say that without the waiver they cannot get a density bonus. If with the waiver they could get a density bonus, then they may in fact come in with more units and 15% of the total being MPDUs. The question is it worth it to give them a waiver even if it's just only 12.5% of a larger number of units without the density bonus? So I think that points to the sliding scale that
that's
you're talking
helpful.
About.
Okay.
And there should be some minimum increase as well.
Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay. Now, the final text amendment portion of this is a subdivision regulation amendment, which is 04-1. The one portion of it, which related to density or height limits of the master plan we've discussed earlier. The other portion relates to allowing a reduction in the public right-of-way width of a tertiary road with the provision of MPDUs on site. We believe that those MPDUs need to be provided on site, and also as Charlie mentioned a second ago, additional provisions should be included in this as well. If you're narrowing the width of the street and allowing the opportunity to provide more units on site, then there should be some additional MPDUs included as part of this. There's also the issue of compatibility with this one as well. So just keep that in mind as well. You have the environmental issue there as well, but also there needs to be compatibility with the adjoining properties.
You asked for, if it's useful, we'll go through what this affects. So if you numbered the rows from 1 to 6, number 1 is the zoning ordinance. Is this useful? Do you want me to do this? No. Okay.
One other thing I just wanted to clarify, I think it's implicit in what we've been discussing, but on the table here, where it, any place where it says provide MPDUs on site, we mean provide all MPDUs on site, not just any additional
right.
MPDUs or
understood.
Density bonus MPDUs.
Okay. Any additional staff presentation?
In terms of the other conceptual issue that we wanted to put on the table is what the planning board's role in terms of the bills associated with these MPDU text amendments, which are, I think is related to 2504 and 2404, how the planning board believes their role would be in the buyout process, and would they tie in conditions of approval with site plans, et cetera, to providing MPDUs all on site, therefore eliminating the possibility of a buyout, or if there is a buyout, then they would have to come back through the process and an amendment to the plans. That's a concept that we're putting out there to for discussion.
But do you have a recommendation?
We believe that as shown on here, all of these, with the exception of the multifamily text amendment, the MPDU should be provided totally on site. Therefore, we don't believe that there should be buyouts for those, I mean, to increase the density or
so the staff recommendation is that if an applicant is going to benefit from any of these relaxation of either master plan mm-hmm. or zoning right. code standards, that they would have to commit, and a condition of the approval would be that all MPDUs will be provided on site.
Yes.
And that would be the extent of our involvement in the buyout process.
Yeah,
I take it your recommendation, therefore, is also that we shouldn't be in the business of reviewing or approving individual buyout agreements. We simply say, if you want relaxed standards, you can't buy out.
Yes.
If you choose to buy out, then you've got to play by the rules that you've always had to play by.
That's
your recommendation?
That's correct.
Okay.
And a two-step process where we would go first, the land use. You get the preliminary plan first and decide whether a bonus is needed. And if it's needed, then no buyout.
Okay. All right. Unless there are any burning questions for the staff at this point, I think we should go to the public comment. And the first three speakers will be Robert Cope, Ginny Barnes, and Wayne Goldstein. Go ahead, Mr. Cope.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Cope. I'm here for the Citizens Coordinating Committee on Friendship Heights, and specifically the Friendship Heights Master Plan. What I would ask staff to do, and this might be a good test for you all, and maybe help you to understand it, is if you took the GEICO track, which is the only track left in the Friendship Heights Master Plan, not going forward, and you look at the R60 TDR, which currently provides for 500 townhouses. And at that time, keep in mind, it was we, the coordinating committee, that was pushing for the housing. We pushed on it on the HEX. They came back and amended and so on. If under the bonus you go to 600, the question of staff is, show me a plan and show me how they do it. If they go to 600, do we lose the ball field? If they go to 600, do we lose part of Brookdale Park? Can staff build 600 houses on that site and not lose the amenities? I think that's important. Because when the planning board is up here, when you're up here, you're wearing two hats. Everybody in the county has an MPDU hat on. But you also have a planning board hat. And you need to look at the plan and determine the do MPDUs trump everything? Do they trump recreation? I don't think that if we're going to build these houses, we take the recreation away. The other point is, if you're going to put the percentages on top of the master plan or on top of the zone, which was the discussion John was having before. Some of the zones have no density base. A lot of the transit stations have no density base. They have no height requirements at all. So you have to put the increase on the master plan limits if you're going to do it. If you put it on a TSR or a TDR or whatever, where there's no real base density, what are we even talking about? I also think you need to put a percentage on the height increase. I think that people who move into neighborhoods and look at a master plan and they say, that building is going to be 15 stories or 10 stories, we can put a little thing inside the master plan and say, but wait a minute, it's going to go up another four or something. I think people are entitled to know up front how much higher the buildings are going to go. The other point I wanted to make was, how does this impact the Woodmont Triangle? How does this impact you all redoing Norfolk Avenue, which was a big point that everyone was making? We want to redo Norfolk Avenue. If MPDs trump everything, do they trump redoing Norfolk Avenue? On the GEICO site, if you go to 600, it's clear you're going to go higher than the master plan with respect to the height of the townhouses that will be there. The question we have is, how do they build those and how much higher will they go? I just think that when we go before the council should know how much higher are these projects going to go. Waivers. We agree with staff, no waivers. If we had never had waivers in the past, we may not even have been here. Because I have no idea where the waiver money is going. But I'm not so sure anybody else does either. But if there were no waivers in the past, we may not be here talking about increased density.
Just for clarity, by waivers, do you mean buyouts?
Buyouts, I'm sorry.
Buyouts.
Right. I'm sorry. Right. I want to conclude with a story I told to the county council when I was talking about MPDUs. And that had to do with going back 40 years when I was in high school with the good school Sisters of Notre Dame. And I was in art class, and the teacher came up and said, you know, I have an art major, and I have no idea what you're doing. I also have a psychology minor, and they told me to stay away from people who use purple and black crayons. The point is, she had two hats on. She had on her art hat. She had on her psychology hat. You all have your hats on, too. And keep in mind, you need to keep your planning board hat on so you can really understand all of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ginny Barnes.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Aren't you glad? Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ginny Barnes. I live on Glen Road in Potomac, and I'm speaking on behalf of the West Montgomery County Citizens Association. We have chosen not to delve into the intricacies in this case, but to deal with the concepts. And I think we would like to do that later, but it seems important now to say that we believe that the package of ZTAs and bills before you is an ill-thought-out, hodgepodge response to a very serious issue, which deserves much more careful consideration. Should these be approved as written, we can easily envision a downtown landscape where sector plans are ignored or rendered irrelevant, where no green space exists, no public use space is provided, buildings are taller, and apartments are built without enough bedrooms for all the residents who live in them. We can also envision single-family zones gradually filled in with attached, semi-attached, and townhouse developments if even a small percentage are MPDUs. We see a buyout program administered by an agency which has allowed our stock of MPDUs to be depleted with very few new additions and for ridiculously low prices, a policy which does not augment the county's stock of affordable housing at all. And we see a county council which has largely ignored its own excellent staff report right here that clearly identifies the problems and solutions to improve the MPDU program in today's complex and supercharged development climate. but mostly we see a danger to the link between master plans and the zoning ordinance, which reference one another and which are interwoven and interdependent. If this legislation is approved, that critical connection is severed and master plans become simply fairy tales that we read at night. We end up with spot zoning or zoning done property by property. We believe that this county has a remarkable, very remarkable, in fact, visionary zoning record, which we are in danger of abandoning without even a backward glance. So we're asking that this planning board make a strong statement to the county council requesting proposals for strengthening the MPDU program, which also strengthen our planning process, not trash it, which do not weaken, nullify, or make irrelevant our master plans and sector plans, but which instead work with those plans and at the direction of those plans. We might also ask for an overall development strategy which does not emphasize commercial development over residential development because it generates more tax revenue and which guarantees a shortage of housing, which in turn guarantees that every single unit of housing will bring the highest possible price. I think that's our mistake. Our citizens have a right to expect their master plans to be valid. We ask that you, our planning board, not simply approve these text amendments with comments, but reject them outright and send them back to the council. You've all said they're vague, they need this, need that. Ask them to use their own staff report and send you a well-thought-out plan which will accomplish our housing opportunities goal in a way that honors and supports our established planning process and works within the framework of the general plan and our master plans. Thank you. And I'd like to say with the little time I have left that I, as an individual who has worked on a master plan, I spent 4 years of my life on the Potomac master plan. I considered that well spent. I would do it again if I had it to do over again. But I never envisioned that I would look up a few years later and see a potentially such a sweeping package of legislation that threatens to force master plans to be driven by an MPDU program. I don't want to see that happen. And I think as a person who believes in master plans, that we should expect more, and we have a right to. This is a public trust issue as much as anything else, so I hope you can hear that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein.
I have a time ceded to me.
Yep. You have 8 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Wayne Goldstein, first vice president of the Montgomery County Civic Federation, MCCF, testifying about an unprecedented package of changes to our zoning regulations. I am providing comments in addition to the position paper of the MCCF Executive Committee that you're receiving right now. We are grateful to your staff for their common sense approach to dealing with the threats to a number of public needs that appear to be the primary effect of most of this package. MCCF thanks and concurs with staff for opposing the reduction for public use space in optional method projects, opposing the vagueness of the density bonus language in order to preserve the integrity of master plans and sector plans, and supporting an increase in the percentage of proposed green space in multiple family zones. While we oppose in principle any ZTA that would allow a master plans or sector plans recommendations to be ignored, we still appreciate staff's insistence that any planning board waiver would only allow such a waiver if the MPDUs were included on site. We also oppose allowing 100% non-single-family units in a single-family zone and allowing narrowing of roads because of the potential for abuse. We note the comparison to already allowing both occurrences for environmental reasons. While we are here today in part to ensure that other public policies do not get short shrift for the sake of affordable housing, we also find that the claim that making these changes for affordable housing reasons is, in fact, not the equal of making such changes for environmental reasons, because affordable housing can be fungible, but environmental resources are much less so. There is further concern that what is the public hearing draft for the Woodmont Triangle Sector Plan Amendment is now being portrayed as a model to justify green space reductions elsewhere, even though there are unique circumstances in the Woodmont Triangle that generated that recommendation in the first place. We are quite dismayed by staff's reasons for supporting a 30-year control period instead of 99 years because of assertions that building materials, quote, invented in the last three or four decades have not stood the test of time and that one can only speculate whether many of the newly invented materials will survive the 99-year control period, unquote. In the nightmare version of this, no housing built in recent decades would survive. It would all have to be replaced. However, if these materials invented in the last 30 to 40 years are in houses that are today qualifying for 30-year mortgages, there is some degree of confidence in the financial industry that these ongoing experiments will be standing when they are 60 to 70 years old. In a worst-case scenario, would we still rather have controls on a house that needs extensive repair and replacement than on none at all? Would we rather have controls on the land the house sits on than have no land at all? There won't be any land in 30 years to build on unless we level existing neighborhoods, subdivide the agricultural reserve, or put newcomers in 100-story apartment towers above Metro. We will want to have a 99-year control period so that MPDUs built from this day forward will be around for future generations, because none of the thousands of current ones will be unless HOC and others buy them up. Arguments about possible building material failures or space need changes in the future have no place in this discussion. A fund will have to be established to provide low-interest loans for those who cannot afford to do future repairs or who need to modernize. Furthermore, even at a 3% rate of inflation, one's official available equity on a $150,000 house will increase by $50,000 after 10 years and by $120,000 after 20 years, and the actual market equity would be considerably higher. Finally, the buyout phenomenon of recent years is not a Silver Spring CBD problem, but is a Bethesda CBD problem with a bit of North Bethesda and Potomac thrown in. This board heard a North Bethesda builder admit that he was negotiating his project's land price at the same time he was negotiating a buyout agreement with DHCA, and I would not be surprised if other price negotiations in this area included such adjustments for MPDUs. The proposed changes will send a message to Silver Spring CBD builders that they don't have to automatically provide the MPDUs on site, the community amenities, the setbacks, and the height limitations that almost all of them have been willing to do up until now. I'd like to quote back to you some of what you recently wrote in your September 1st opinion on Ripley Street. Quote, the moderately priced housing objective of Montgomery County is to provide MPDU units in the CBDs where high-rise developments are located. The living opportunities provided will enhance the quality of the community environment with the proposed streetscapes, park area, and landscaping that is integral to the project. The proposed building design creates an urban street edge but is minimal in actual street frontage, and it avoids creating a potential canyon appearance. The openness of the Dixon Avenue right-of-way and the urban park counterbalance building height and configuration. Unquote. This was achieved using current policy along with the recently enacted ZTA that provided flexibility in building height to achieve a number of objectives, including MPDUs on site. If the proposed changes of this package had been law when this project came forward, much that is lauded in this opinion may have been absent, and we might have ended up with a hulking building that created a canyon. Please follow the recommendations of your staff in crafting your advice for the County Council, and please consider the positions of MCCF as well. Look more closely at the thorough County Council staff report on the MPDU program, a remarkably thoughtful and detailed analysis that made many sensible recommendations, none of which are in most of the package. Only Bill 25-04 proposes to make the changes included in the report. The problem is that this package is a solution in search of a problem. Most of the package will not generate more MPDUs. Let's take this package apart and only make the few incremental changes that might be needed, and then figure out how we can actually create more MPDUs and other affordable housing in Montgomery County. Thank you.
Thank you. ask any questions?
Yes, I have one question.
Mr. Robinson?
Yeah, I do have a question also.
For Mr. Cope, the 500 townhouses you're talking about, is the limitation there a sector plan limitation or a limitation in the underlying zone?
It's the sector plan.
Sector plan.
And the sector plan language says 500, including all applicable MPDUs. So it's really an interpretation of what that means. I interpret the language of the bill as increasing it to 600. And I don't think under the language of the bill you can build those 600 without doing with the amenities. I think under John's changes, you might be. I don't know. I mean, it's up to John.
Well, John, that's a fair question. Maybe you'd like to comment on it.
I never thought they could build the 500. I thought 500 was a... but I think Bob's got an interesting point there about the... While the text amendments talk about increasing density... over and above what a master plan says, it's not clear about, in this case, it's the ball field and Brookdale Park. I would assume, but this is an assumption, without having the language, you would still need the Brookdale Park and the ball field. But, of course, that puts more tension on the density.
Well, the language is...
This is not overriding that portion of the master plan, but that's an assumption on my part.
Well, I guess it sounds like that could be another point that might be...
Yes.
...clarification that might be needed if certain amenities are provided in the master plan.
Yes.
As opposed to amenities that flow from the standards in the zone.
Right.
That the master plan amenities are not intended to be touched because they affect the overall habitability of the community.
I think that's an excellent point.
Well, I'll just save it for later, but the other interesting point is sub silentio overruling the fact that it says 500 dwelling units, including MPDU density bonuses, and how you reconcile that. I want to talk about that later.
And just for Wayne, you mentioned three options. Tongue-in-cheek, the fourth option I've heard banded is, 10 lanes to Frederick County and put the units there. So sometime you might tell us which of those poisons you would choose to embrace.
Thank you. Are you finished, sir?
My question may have been answered. It was also to you, Bob, and that was because I read all of this, and I just didn't recall where if the language suggested that the amenities would have to be done away with in order to meet any kind of additional densities, et cetera. But the response that I now understand is that it's not written, but it may be implied that you could, in fact, do that. And therefore, if I understand what Mr. Robinson is suggesting, is that we need to make sure that in terms of clarification,
yes,
that we're not allowing the negation of amenities that the master plan calls for. So if that's, in fact, what we're saying, then okay, I'm okay. The second thing, though, and you said it, and Jenny said it, and Wayne implied it, and that is the notion about MPDUs trumping, not thumping.
They could thump, too.
Would you go back to your nuns and ask
if that's called? They can all thump.
But you got me with the crayons. But anyway.
That's a true story.
Trumping everything. And what that suggests is a type of adversary automatically, that if you, in fact, are pushing to get more MPDUs built, then, and if you push, you're pushing at the sacrifice of everybody else and everything else. And I just didn't get the impression that was the intent of these parcels of legislation. Am I missing something? Is this trumping everything?
Well, it's the language where it says as necessary. From a staff perspective, that's the thing that causes the most concern.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the intent is. I hope the intent was just the bonus. It is not trumping everything. But it's not clear when you have that language. And almost all the text amendments have that as necessary.
Okay. So that I see that then as kind of a caution. to us that we need to be aware.
Okay, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, that one doesn't drive the rest.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. This is helpful also, the way you outlined that.
Cheryl Court, Nancy Wendt, and John Clark.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'm representing the Washington Regional Network for Livable Communities. We're a nonprofit that promotes transportation investments, land use policies, and neighborhood designs to enhance existing communities and protect the environment.